Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Really, 007.
Welcome to the Really 007 podcast for this special behind the camera interview with Lee Sheward. Now, Lee is a stuntman extraordinaire and has over 30 years' experience of performing, coordinating, and directing stunts and action sequences, and now second unit directing, I believe. And of course, amongst that, he has done the James Bond films Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough. So, the glorious Pierce Brosnan era. So, we love that. Now, you can watch our other interviews on our YouTube channel, and you can also listen to episodes on iTunes and Spotify. We're on all these social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So check us out there, follow us, and join in the conversation. With me today, we have John Kell and Math Pickup. I should say I'm Tom. I'm Tom Pickup as well. So, yeah, we have my brother Matthew here.
Hiya.
And we have John here.
Hi, Lee.
So, yeah, oh, great to meet you, Lee. I gather you're currently filming in Greece, is that right?
Yes. For my scenes, I'm down in the southern part of Greece, about 3 hours from Athens. We had an early start today at about 4 a.m., but I got wrapped by noon. So it's 5 past 6 in the evening. So, yeah, the rest of the day is my own.
Very good. Oh, you wouldn't be allowed to tell us what you're filming at the moment, Lee, would you?
Yeah, I can. Back with Mr. Daniel Craig and a few other of his co-stars. We're doing a Netflix film, Knives Out.
Right. The sequel. Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
I might not be able to say what we were doing, but as it's all over the press at the moment, I don't think that's a problem.
So, oh, no.
I can't tell you much about the production itself or what the storyline is.
Yeah.
But yeah, plenty of twists in that.
Yeah, you can't tell us who've done it, but yeah.
But you've worked with Daniel before, haven't you, on Enduring Love and some other films?
I have. I actually haven't had anything to do with these in his Bond career. I haven't really seen much of him on this, actually. But yeah, going back a number of years, many, many years ago, when we were both younger men, he did a show, Our Friends in the North.
Yes.
Up in Newcastle. When I was a young fledgling stunt, I worked on that in some riot sequences. And then, yes, you're absolutely right. I did about 15 years ago, we did Enduring Love, the Roger Michelle picture where I played the part of Logan, fell off the hot air balloon. That actually starts the whole story off.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Crucial. And what's Daniel like as a bloke?
I can't honestly say I know him very well, but on set and in a professional manner, very professional. And he was very nice to work with last time we were together. As this production's only a week in and I haven't had much to do with him yet. We've got some more work to do with him later on. I'm sure he'll be just as professional this time around.
We know he likes doing a lot of his own stunts, which is always good. It always helps you out, I suppose.
Both getting to an age in our careers where he looks the part and he's quite happy stepping back. I think his time of being 007 is probably, he's up for something a little bit more leisurely now, I'd imagine. And likewise, so am I.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to take you back to how it all started, Lee. How did you get involved with stunts? You're a stunt performer to start with.
I'm the archetypal little bit never grew up. So I always, from a very, very early age, always just wanted to be a stuntman. I was thinking about this last night, actually. My first recollection of going to the cinema was to actually see a Bond double bill. My late father took me to see when I was, it must have been about 74, 75. And it was a Live and Let Die and Man with a Golden in
Twickenham. J.W. Pepper, double bill.
There you go. You know, can you imagine doing a 007 double bill in this stage? It didn't happen. So I got dragged out. I was very hyperactive. So that was probably trying to get me away from my poor old mum. And dad took me to see that. But from about 7 or 8, all I really wanted to do was work in film and TV. I didn't have, at that age, any understanding of what stuntmen do and how the whole business runs around stunt performers and coordinators. I didn't really have any clue. I just knew I wanted to have fun and drive cars. So, bless them, both of them did take it as, oh, it's just another kid's fantasy. They actually very quickly looked into what was involved, how it went about it. And then I was very fortunate, because I came from a sporty background, a friend of my mum's was a casting director. And by chance, they needed someone that could swim and dive to double a child on a 14-year-old on a feature in 1984 called Top Secret. So I went along and had the audition. I went and had the audition for that, and not only got the part as the double, if you like, but they offered me the role because they said it's easier just to stick a wig on me and let me play the part than it was to get another actor and then double the actor. So I ended up playing the part. To have a week as a 14-year-old, a week on a feature film was like, that was it. I was hooked. This is what I'm going to do.
Amazing.
Then,
so good.
Then over the next couple of years, I worked in circus because I was too young to start stunt work. Worked in circus for a year and a half. I was a filmster for a little while. And I worked in jousting show, live performance and horse touring around either that. And then finally, I got a break through the jousting. And I had been an accident, only a minor one, but one of the stunt riders on a film called Willow, the Ron Howard picture.
Love it.
He'd broken his leg, and they were short of a rider, and a friend from the jousting. Yeah, as an 18-year-old, I got called up to work on Willow, and that was the first job I had as a stuntman. And then the rest is really history, as they say.
So were you involved with, like, Ron Howard and George Lucas on set and stuff?
Not at that age. I mean, I was literally what the day old stuntman that just walked on. So I was working with all these legendary British stuntmen who had come into the industry and were all well established. My first set, it was over 86 stuntmen on set, and it was horses falling over and people jumping off of windows and buildings. And I was like just sitting there with my eyes open. So no, I didn't involve any of it at that point. Over the years, I've sort of passed with them. I worked with Ron again on Far and Away.
You were also on Young Indiana Jones as well, Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
I did work on the Young Indy Chronicles. That's we actually shot part of that out in Prague in the early 90s. At that point, the stunt coordinator was a gentleman called Simon Crane. And funny enough, Vic Armstrong, who went on to obviously direct all the Bond films and stuff. Simon and Vic were colleagues, and they took a team of us away, and we ended up shooting out in Prague for a few weeks. Doing a chase sequence on that show. It had a bit of a Bond theme, really, because some of the producers on that were in their early days, the early days of that, some of the crew then went on to become the producers of the latter Bond films. So I remember, there was a Bond theme running through that. And likewise, I'd worked for Vic as well on the actual Indiana Jones. I did Last Crusade with him as a young performer as well. So I'd worked with Vic before. And Simon and I, strangely enough, met many years before that when I was working after the circus. I did an audition for an Acromaniacs comedy knockabout show. And Simon was actually in that leaving. So, and he's a little bit older than me. You can edit that bit out. if he sees this, he won't start moaning. But Simon's a little bit older than me. So I was about 16. I think he was about 23 or 24. So he was leaving that and I was trying to start. So we had met previously. So a lot of the stuntmen in that period, you found, were all intertwined. We all sort of came from similar backgrounds. We all knew each other, or we crossed paths
Did you ever work with Pat Roach? Because wasn't he a stuntman who, you know, often got parts in Indiana Jones and Bond for you know, big, like, henchman-type roles?
Well, Pat, I never actually met Pat. By the time I started work, he was established as an actor. You remember, right. he played Bomber in Alvida's End Pet in the 80s.
Oh, right, yeah.
Prior to that, he'd been a wrestler. So right. he used to be on, if there's any of the older generation watching this, on the Nicky Davis on a Saturday afternoon with the World of Sport. Pat was one of the wrestlers that was right. on that, and it went into acting. He'd worked a lot as a fight guy and a heavy, because I don't know how big he was. He was quite a large gentleman.
Yeah.
And he'd done Never Say Never Again with Vic and standalone Bond film. He'd worked on that. And then he'd worked on Indian Raiders, Temple of Doom, and then Last Crusade. So I never personally met him.
Right.
Although I understand he was a nice fella. But yeah, there's a lot of those sort of guys that were known for that background, and they played the part. Actually, one of the girls that I use quite a bit at the moment, a lady called Phoebe, her grandfather and uncle, Dougie and Joe Robinson. Stuntmen. Joe actually played a part of Peter Franks in Diamonds Are Forever.
For the
lift fight shaft.
His
granddaughter now works as a stuntwoman.
Amazing.
That's brilliant.
Isn't there that unbelievable story about Joe Robinson where when he was 70 year old or something and he got about six men tried mugging him and he took them all on and battered them all?
Yeah, that story, there's a few stuntmen that's happened to as well. Another friend of mine who's, you know, getting on a bit now, but Dinny Powell, the uncle of Gary Powell and Greg Powell, they tried to mug him on the tube train a couple of years ago, and he's in his late 70s, early 80s, and the same thing happened. old man isn't so little and isn't so old, and he put up a bit of a fight, and there was all sorts of trouble.
Flipping egg.
Yeah. Wow. Armstrong.
I assume that, they're going to be an easy touch.
yeah. No, not at all, no. Don't know who you're messing with.
They do the research before they mug you, don't they?
Show me stunt card, yeah. You mentioned Vic Armstrong, Lee, and obviously he's been a massive part of not only the Bond franchise, but just the stunt world in general. Is it amazing to sort of learn on the job with people like him?
Yeah, I mean, any there's a few. Vic obviously stands out, but any of those guys that lived through the 60s, 70s, through into the 80s when I started and the films they did, I mean, it was a completely different job. You have to stand up to their reputation and who they are. Very sadly, they're getting to a point where there's not that many of them left, but it's an honour to sit in their company and hear the stories. You know, every couple of years, bless them, a few more fade away. And leave us, which is very sad. But it's been an honour to, over my career, to have worked with a lot of them. As I mentioned earlier, walking onto the set of Willow, and there was upwards of 86 stuntmen there, across the generations. But there are people that go down like Alf Joint and Jerry Crampton and Peter Brace and, you know, Roy Lon. He just goes on, the list goes on and on, that I've actually worked with and worked alongside, and in some cases had the privilege of employing, where I needed certain older characters. Peter Diamond, that went on to coordinate the early three Star Wars films, worked for me, which was, you know, very nice. And obviously, as I say, they've all passed away now, so it holds fond memories.
Yeah. You said that you watched this Bond double bill. So being a Bond fan growing up, it must be incredible to sort of work on a Bond film. I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, from that period as a young boy coming into that, I didn't know much about the franchise at that point. But then a couple of years later, we were on holiday with my parents on the Isle of Wight, and The Spy Who Loved Me came out. I think I saw that about four times that week.
So good.
Yeah. I mean, and again, the second Ricky Sylvester skied off the cliff and parachuted, that was it. I was hooked again.
Yeah.
A couple of years later, you know, every as they come out every 2 years, at that period of time, it was another summer holiday, and it was, I think, Moonraker was the next one. I can remember where we were away on a summer holiday. I think I saw that seven times. That period of the 70s, we only had the Isle of Wight as a holiday, and the weather was always not very good. So I used to take me pound coin or whatever it was, 125, and go off, and every evening my parents would be off doing their thing and I'd be in the cinema watching a Bond film again. I used to lap it all up. You know, Star Wars, Bond, Jaws, you know, the early Indiana Jones films, anything and everything. I just couldn't get enough of it. And certainly so every Easter, Christmas, and Bank Holiday Tuesday that they used to have, as they still do. So that was it. I was glued to the telly catching up. When I finally got asked, it was actually not a disappointment, but the first time I got asked to work was on GoldenEye. Simon Crane, who's the stunt coordinator on GoldenEye, was putting together a team of guys, a core team. He asked me to be part of the core team. Unfortunately, these things happen. I just said yes to working on Mission Impossible. So the first Mission Impossible and GoldenEye were made parallel at the same time in different studios in the UK. And by chance, I just said yes to working on on Mission Impossible. So I had to decline GoldenEye. But, you know, these things happen.
We saw you in that scene, didn't we? The fish tank, that is you, isn't it? Getting thrown out of the water and all that. Yeah.
Wow. Why don't we quietly get out of here onto a plane? I can understand you're very upset.
Kittredge, you've never seen me very upset.
All right, Hunt. Enough is enough. You have bribed, cajoled, and killed, and you have done it using loyalties on the inside. You want to shake hands with the devil, that's fine with me. I just want to make sure that you do it in hell.
Tested all the gags, really. That was one where you actually see me play the part of the waiter and then get fired through. And we were IMF agents on that. But then also, I tested all the train sequence with a wind machine at the end of that particular picture. In the early days of the Mission films, a lot of it was heavily, which they still use CGI, computer-generated images. But now, I know Tom's pushing hard on doing as much as he possibly can. Actually, on that note, I remember clearly in those days we were sitting there between the long takes, and the stunt coordinator on that picture was Greg Powell. Greg and I were sitting there just having a tea break, if you like, and Tom was sitting with us, and we started discussing the physics and the money of the train sequence we were putting together. And I said to him at the time, how much is this costing? Because they had the whole 007 stage, it was a massive green screen, they built the train, it was a big sequence, and it's the finale of the film. And I can't remember what the exact figure was, he mentioned it's like $18 million, but it was a lot of money, and we sort of went, oh my God, that's a lot of money. And I said, well, for half of that money, I'd do this for real. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, everything we're doing on this fake train in the sound stage, I said, you could do for real. I said, we could put the wires on the train and hang on the side of the Eurostar, and actually, you know, we could do this for real. And I remember to this day the cogs whirring in his head, and you could see him thinking about it. Lo and behold, as the films progressed, Tom then obviously picked up that. Mm. I felt we Greg and I laid a seed.
He's
now become the Jackie Chan stunt actor of his generation, if you like. Every film gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
That is incredible.
You should be asking for a cut there, to be honest.
Yeah.
I never worked on another Mission, so maybe I should ask for. maybe you can do the next one without till about 7, or maybe on Mission 8 is the Return of the Waiter.
Yeah, 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 and, yeah.
Covered in fish or something.
Yeah, he wouldn't have died. It was just
Kevin McClory kind of tribunal appeal going on here.
Yeah. Oh, awesome! Yeah, you've worked with quite a lot of the Bond actors, haven't you? So we've obviously we know Pierce Brosnan. We'll talk about a bit about that later. We mentioned Daniel and Sean Connery then on The Last Crusade and First Night. I mean, we're obsessed with that film. Yeah. We absolutely love that film. And that's all with the horses again, isn't it?
It was. I've never got starstruck. It's never been one of the things that's bothered me. I find any of the celebrities, so-called movie stars that I work with, just professional people trying to do a job. Sometimes you have a lot to do with them. Sometimes you don't have a lot to do with them. Some are easy to work with. Some can be a bit tricky. But honestly, the only person I've ever felt sort of tingling at the back of my neck was when Sean Connery walked onto the set of Indy. The first thing I did on that was we were involved in a sequence where there's a revolving fireplace and Harrison tied to a chair and he's got his Zippo lighter up there and they accidentally drop it on the floor and set fire to the carpet and then the curtains.
Yeah.
Dad! Oh, Dad! Oh, Dad! Oh! Head for the fireplace!
I think I can get these ropes up. Whoops.
Our situation has not improved.
Listen, Dad, I'm almost free.
The audience that haven't seen it, I'm sure it can't be many because it's they press the little foot plate and it turns into a revolving fireplace. And we were involved behind the fireplace. We were the Gestapo German. So I was only about 20. Yeah, a young fledgling. But the day that Sean walked onto the set, I was like,
Never mind Harrison Ford, you know.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I mean, Harrison came in and was sort of, you know, it's Harrison over there, and I'd seen all the indie films. But no, that never made a big impression, really. Although he's a nice man.
Yeah.
But no, Sean was a big, oh my God, this is Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And bless him, you know, sadly we lost him last year. But he was a big fella. He was 6'2" and a heavy set man.
Yeah.
He was much. Not, you know, he was an imposing figure to be stood next to.
In that film, I was just going to say, he's supposed to be like a bit of a sort of bumbling older man, really, isn't he?
there was nothing bumbling about him likewise, when I worked with him again on First Night, as you mentioned, I was actually put with him, again, Greg Powers, the stunt coordinator. Greg put me with Sean had his own personal horse guy, a Spanish stuntman called Miguel Pedregosa, and Greg put me with Miguel to sort of help and hold his horse and be with him. And seeing Sean, you know, when you're holding the bridle of the horse and you've got Sean Connery sitting on this horse, and it wasn't a small horse, and so you've got playing King Arthur looking down on you, it's an imposing thing. He's a big man.
Did you work with Sean Connery on Entrapment as well?
I did work with Sean Connery on Entrapment. That again was for Vic. Funnily, with that, with that particular picture, Vic asked me to be the main unit coordinator. I had just booked a family holiday, and I said to my wife, "Well, there might be some work here. I'm not sure. I'll have to speak to them about what they want to do." But they said, "Oh no, it's only a few days." I said, "Well, I've got this family holiday booked. My children were quite small, so they said, 'Oh, well, you know, have the holiday.'" The guy that replaced me, I think, ended up doing about 6 months in where did they go?
Kuala Lumpur.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
Jim, one of the other guys, ended up running the main unit and was gone for months and months and months. So it's show business.
Well, there you go. Yeah. All, I'm sure your kids will. Now, thank you.
We did a big car chase, huge car chase that Vic shot for about 7 weeks over in the Docklands in East London through the Limehouse Link. And it was about 45 drivers, and they spent a fortune rolling lorries and trucks and crashing cars, and none of it's in the film.
Yeah, I was just in the
trailer for the film, but none of it's in the movie. They edited it and cut it all out. They did a sequence where they jump into the Jag and roar out of Borough Market, and there's this pristine Jaguar cut. They turn up outside a castle in Scotland, and this Jag fleetingly is seen smashed to pieces. Not a squad.
Right.
But the actual middle bit, the car chase, was never in the movie.
Oh, dear.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
It must happen a lot when you've filmed for months or weeks and then it's just not, or barely any of it is in the film.
Does happen. We did a completely different film. People asked me, oh, you worked on Love Actually.
Yeah, we were going to ask you, yeah.
Did you? I went, well, yeah, I was on that for sort of 9 or 10 weeks. And they said,
oh, right.
What stunts are there in Love Actually?
Yeah.
And, like, and if anyone watches, not so much on television anymore, because the bit we did is not in the movie, but if you have the DVD, check out the DVD extras on Love Actually. And there's the stunt ensemblement. And what happened is, there's a throwaway line with the little boy who's rushing off to see his girlfriend at the airport. He said somewhere that, oh, I'm off the gym, Dad, when his dad's Liam Neeson. He says to Liam, he said, oh, I'm off to see, I'm off the gym club. Thomas, the little, well, he's not so little anymore, he's about 30 odd, but the little boy playing the part, he's chased through the airport to get there. And again, you see him turning up in the movie at the gate, arrivals area, cut, he ends at the gate, sees his girlfriend and they wave and have a little kiss and off he goes. With a bit in the middle, we did this massive foot chase with 25 stuntmen. We did an acrobatic tumbling routine. We built into the roof section of this set that they built in Shepperton Studios, isometric bars so that he could jump around and do like a parkour gymnastics routine in the roof. We shot this whole massive sequence. None of it's in the film. I did get a very nice letter from, and it wasn't an email, it was a letter, nice letter from Richard apologising, saying, oh, thank you so much for your work, but we unfortunately didn't use any of it in the movie. Yeah, they cut it all out. It's in the DVD extras.
Release the steward cuts, that's what we'll get. Yeah, hashtag, we'll get that going, Lee. Dearie me, oh, love to see that. Yeah, we'll watch the DVD.
If you're enjoying the Really 007 podcast, why not follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter? Effective immediately. We're not a country club, 007.
You've also worked with Timothy Dalton. Now, we're huge fans of Tim as James Bond. So were you with him on The Rocketeer and Hot Fuzz? Is that right?
Yeah, I was. We shot The Rocketeer in Los Angeles. At that period of my career, I was working for a section of wire riggers and guys flying on wires. So I was actually based in Florida. We went out to LA to do The Rocketeer, shot briefly. I actually didn't get involved with him too much at all on that picture. And likewise, I did the car chase on second unit on Hot Fuzz for a colleague of mine, Paul Herbert, who's the stunt coordinator. So again, I didn't really get involved with him, but didn't even see him, to be honest with you. A friend of mine, Jamie Edger, was the stunt driver, and Jamie and I were jumping cars and doing our thing on the splinter unit. But I did work with Timothy many years later on Doctor Who. One of the episodes with Christopher Eccleston as the head time lord or something. So I did cross paths with him on that. But again, not really in a stunty vein. He was more big and majestic as the time, you know, the leader of the Time Lords.
You're a fan of Tim as Bond. Please tell me you are.
Yeah, I mean, I came in, obviously, with Roger in his early days. And to me, you know, I know, to me, it's really, my first and second choice is Sean with a very close George Lazenby. I still think
good.
The Majesty's
Secret Service. Yes, come on.
Good lad.
He's one of the better ones. I mean, if not the best one. Mm. I mean, between that and Goldfinger, they're sort of my two faves.
Superbly.
Yes.
as your viewing audience have probably noticed, you know, being in Greece today, I do travel around quite a bit with work and family. Goldfinger and On the Majesty's Secret Service are the only two that I carry on a hard drive with me and watch repeatedly.
Oh, that's so good.
Brilliant.
So GoldenEye you couldn't do, unfortunately, but Tomorrow Never Dies, you were hired on that, so that must have been incredible.
It was. I was hired in two veins for that. One, we did a fight sequence where I played a part of one of the henchmen that came out of nowhere. The stunt supervisor Dickie Beer and I had worked together before. He just rang me, can you come in and do this fight sequence and do a fall off a crane? So we turned up as you do. Rehearsed it, put it all together. The sequence was shot by Vic Armstrong. We were over in East London near Wapping in a print works. Although the film's set in Germany, it wasn't. It was shot in London. We rehearsed the fight again and shot it all. At that period, Wayne Michaels was still doubling Bond and doubling Piers. So we shot the fight with Wayne on the second unit with Vic. They then kept us on for a couple of extra days, and we went back with main unit with Roger Spotterswood and shot the whole thing again, this time with Piers. So the insert shots and the bits of dialogue with him were all shot again with main unit, and we all stayed on for that. It's quite a quick sequence in the movie, probably about a minute or something. But I think we were there for like 2.5 weeks. It was quite a long shoot. And obviously, I was one of the victims calling in the print works. And they'll print anything these days. I got munched up by the machinery. And it was a nice sequence to do. It was a tricky fall. We did the fall 4 times. The gantry's moving. We built the catch area in the machine, which wasn't running, I must add, but then I had to fall over the handrail and go into the machine. Yeah.
Print anything these days.
We did it a number of times, mainly because, well, the first time I did it, the gantry stopped. What we didn't realise is there's a kill wire underneath it. And as I fell over the side of it, Wayne throws a punch and I went backwards over the rail. I don't know if it was my hand or my foot, but I just hit the kill switch. So that the gantry has like a sensor. If there's anything in the way, it will stop the gantry moving. So the first time I hit it, that was wrong. I go again. I can't remember what the others were. I think it was just trying to get the angle right, because they're trying to throw the punch on a moving gantry from a camera position. I think either my reaction was bad or Wayne threw the punch early or something on the gantry. But we did it. We did that fall 4 times.
It was pretty dangerous. I mean, just like backwards fall.
Yeah, it wasn't too tricky. The actual gantry 60-odd feet in the air. So when you go over the top, it's about 60 foot up. I was only falling about 20 foot. Wait, you're looking down 60, so it's not
it's more than I've ever fallen.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it for everybody.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Is it regular that you get like injuries and stuff, you know, as a result of, I assume it is, but obviously it's an occupational hazard.
Touch wood, my performing days are sort of semi over, but in 30 odd years of actually performing, I've had a few bumps and bruises and burns and bits and pieces, but I didn't break anything. I've got a few, you know, obviously, as I say, bumps and bruises, but I've got away pretty well doing a lot of things. But no, I think if you're a typist or a secretary or work in a bank or something, you will make a mistake. You will get a typing error. Mm. You will count something wrong and you have to do it again. If you're a bricklayer, you're going to, you know, lay a wonky brick and have to correct it. Unfortunately, if you're a stunt man, you are playing the odds game and eventually you are going to get banged up somewhere down the line. It's, you know, as much as we're getting clever and we're calculated and working the best, falling off horses hurts, crashing motorbike hurts. You know, there's no way of not getting a bump or a bruise. It's going to happen. I mean, you minimise it. Accidents do happen, unfortunately, but we do sort of minimise it as best we possibly can.
What stunt would you say you're most proud of?
Oh, that's a good question. I've done half a dozen things that stand out as standalone jobs. The balloon sequence, which you mentioned on the Enduring Love, where I, you know, hung off the balloon and went up over Oxfordshire and then fell 200 foot off the balloon. That's obviously one. These are memorable. It was my idea. I did a children's family film called Stormbreaker, the Alex Rider films. About 10, 12, 14 years ago. And in that, is one of the moments is that the assassin's hanging off a lamppost, and as the car drives past, he shoots the Ewan McGregor's character from a lamppost. And I went, that's a bit boring. So I said, well, why don't we do it for a helicopter? And they went, oh, okay. So we actually did that. So that was my idea, and I then did the job. It was me hanging under the helicopter. So I was upside down, hanging on wires, traveling down a road at about 35 miles an hour, 3 feet around, chasing this car. We shot it on the Isle of Man. And I must admit, as I was going down the road upside down, a friend of mine, George Cottle, was driving the car, and I'm very close to George. And at points we hit the roof, hit the door, hit everything except the floor. I did think, oh, this is a bit stupid. Whose idea was this? that was quite exciting. But over the years, all sorts of things. I mean, I did the I've done a lot of car work as a driver. I did the Bourne Supremacy car chase through Moscow, where we chased the yellow taxi with two friends.
Brilliant.
Wow. Steve Griffin and Ray DeHaan, two other stunt drivers, and I went out as specialist drivers on that. We were the primary drivers for the car chase from Moscow, which stands out. People remember that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant scene.
Yeah, I worked on the BBC Top Gear show, doing all the crashing and jumping and skidding around for a couple of seasons. That was quite good fun. Yeah, so
you can do quite a lot of different things, obviously, can't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Driving's a totally different skill, you know, and underwater stuff as well.
I always assumed that there were different people for different types of stunt. I mean, I assume there is that a little bit, but it sounds like you're pretty versatile, Lee.
I like to think that I can turn my hand to most things. There are things that there are people that are much, much better than me at. I don't parachute. I have done a little bit. It's not my thing. We've done some parachuting on films. When we did The English Patient, we parachuted into Tobruk for that. And we were on a canopy and it was released, but we were on a wire system that we cut away from and the parachute's already out. So it's not any skydiving skill. So I don't really skydive. I can ride a motorcycle, but I'm not a motorcyclist. There are guys that are geniuses with all that stuff. So, and across the board, I'm a jack of all trades and a master of none. I can turn my hands to a lot of things. I can ride. I can drive quite well. I came from a swimming background, so I've done a lot of underwater work. But there are world champions in every field, and that does happen. You do get one-trick ponies. But no, I've tried to spread my career so I've got a broad spectrum. And I also like to think that if someone can't do something that I'm asking them to do, I can always throw the costume on and do it myself. So that gives me sort of confidence in what I'm doing as a stunt coordinator.
The famous one was the Titanic. Weren't you one of the guys, poor guys, who fell off when it goes on its end, basically?
Titanic was a good, very memorable job. One, my son was born just before it, and he's 25 now, so time's passing quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was again, Simon Crane was the stunt coordinator on that film. We shot in Mexico. There was about 100 of us. There was a lot of stuntmen on that production, obviously, for the finale. But yeah, they built a big section of the tower of the ship, the poop deck, which was built into hydraulics, so the whole thing could stand up. It was as big as an 11-story building. So when it went up in the air, it was like a whole skyscraper going up in the air. We were all strapped onto it in certain ways. And there was about 10 of us on wire rigs, on descending rigs, which give you a very quick release, and then you fall down on a cable. There was 10 of us on that. So but when you're laid out flat, it's just walking around, it just feels like you're on the back of the boat. But when this thing slowly stands up in the air, it is quite monumental, because at the top you're 100 feet in the air. On cue, you have to let go.
Ian, me. Never been done before, I assume, anything like that.
Nothing on the scale of that, no. It's or certainly not in my memory. It was an epic job.
Yeah.
And then obviously you did the underwater scene in the Devonshire on Tomorrow Never Dies as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done a load of diving and underwater ship productions over the years. One of the first skills I got as a young man trying to get into stunt work was scuba diving. I started diving when I swam for the county and for school, etc., when I was young. And then I started scuba diving at 13. So I did a lot of scuba diving. And then later on, when I started working, I sort of got known for doing, diving work, and I was good in water. When it came to Tomorrow Never Dies, we'd just done the crane fight that I mentioned before. and Vic was in a bit of a problem where they were shooting action and second unit during the day, but the underwater unit was built on the same set. So the Devonshire, the upstairs part of the Devonshire and Carver's boat was on the 007 stage at Pinewood, and that was upstairs. And the underwater bit is in a tank, and the 007 stage was built underneath it. So 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. main unit were in and they were doing action on the boat. And then 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. all through the night, second unit or the underwater unit would come in and we'd follow the storyboards and shoot all the underwater stuff. So there's no way Vic and Dickie and the other stunt people could do that. So I got a call out of the blue. Vic said, can you come in and coordinate the whole of the underwater units? Again, I think it's about 2 minutes in the film, but it's about 9 weeks' work. Working underwater takes about eight times longer than it does out in air, and you have to come up and change cylinders and bits and pieces. But yeah, all that sequence was shot there. We also had, there's other bits, not just the Devonshire bit, but there's the bit where Bond and Mei Ling, Michelle Yeoh are chained together and thrown under the water. And above, we did all that sequence as well. It was all shot at the same time with them.
Incredible. How much of it was Michelle Yeoh and Pierce Brosnan then?
We had them for a couple of days, not a lot, and literally just for their moments. They're too valuable and their time's too valuable.
Yeah.
Certainly night, because if they have to come in on night, then they lose them the next day as well. Yeah. So they come in for their beats. The doubles on that sequence were, I had a few from Michelle Yeoh, flitting in and out. Piers's double was Mark Southworth on that sequence, who sort of working alongside Wayne Michaels as the principal double. But it was Mark we had on that sequence. One of the funny sequences with that actually was that they wanted them to kiss. She's supposed to be brown,
yeah,
like the kid. So I said to the two doubles, Mark particular, I said they're going to need to do this moment in a wide, and he went okay. So we're buddy breathing. So anyone that understand scuba diving, you take your regulator out and you give it to your partner, and then they breathe and you share air. So it's the same thing. So Mark has the regulator taken out, now he's holding his breath and he's chained up and he's there. And when he went into the kiss, the other double stuck a tongue in his mouth. So all these bubbles came out and it was a total panic and chaos, and we had to go and save Bond from drowning.
Well, so, worth it for the gag.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I think if footage is anywhere buried in Eon's vault, I'd love to get it out. It'd be worth a fortune.
Super.
Must be there somewhere in the editing practice. we did have a lot of fun.
Pierce interested in the underwater stuff? Was he all right?
He was. I think he was more interested in the fights than that. I don't think the underwater bit was his cup of tea, to be honest with you. He did it. I wouldn't say he loved it. It was, I'm not saying a chore, but I think he had other things on his mind. I did have a really funny conversation with him when we were doing the fight on the crane. And we were sitting up on a gantry again, waiting for the next shot of the camera changing a lens or something, and we were talking, and my wife and I had just moved house, and we were sitting there just chatting, and he said, oh, what are you doing at the weekend? No, I said to him, what are you doing at the weekend? And he said, oh, not a lot. And he said to me, oh, what are you doing at the weekend? I said, oh, I'm going to be digging the footings for my kitchen that my wife wants, so I'll be out, you know, digging this ditch to put the footings in. And he went, oh. So I said to him, you don't want to come and help me dig the footings, do you? He paused for a moment and looked up, and I thought, oh, I said something wrong here. And he went, do you know what? He said, I think my footing digging days are over. Oh, yeah, probably a good point. Yeah, I think they probably are as well. he's a nice man. He can run with a joke.
Oh, good. We love Always him. Good to hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's some other scenes that were shot for that weren't in the film that you were involved in.
For Tomorrow Never Dies?
Yeah.
I don't know really. I went in, we took Ray DeHaan, one of my friends again, who I've mentioned, who's a great motorcyclist. He'd gone in and tested a lot of the the BMW bike stuff. But I think most of my stuff was on the underwater thing. And again, because I was locked into night, so I sort of missed a lot of half the production I was spent underwater doing all that. So that unit kept me very busy for that picture. So no, not really.
Such a technical scene. I was watching it again. The amount of different shots you have to do, different views, the movement of the Devonshire tilting again. It's just must have been an absolute nightmare logistically and everything.
Yeah, the whole thing again is built underwater. Because you're underwater, everything has to be very heavy. So all those missiles in the racks, as they all fall over, they're all on quick releases. If they were too light, from memory they were like 700 pounds, like nearly a ton each one. Wow. So if it went up, if it got you, it would really pin you down. It would hurt you. But if it wasn't as heavy as it was, it wouldn't fall quick enough. You know, the film would be over and the rack would still be going over it. It'd be so light. You know,
yeah.
Come back. Was it still going? So it had to be very heavy. So everything in there was really heavy. And Chris Corbould and Peter Notley and all his effects crew that put that together built a great set. It was all on hydraulics, and even though it was underwater, it all moved. So all that stuff with the doors shutting and then the missile racks, all that is it's not pulled on cables. It is the whole thing tilting. And the chain blocks running is just chain blocks are there, and as the set moves, the chain blocks run away with gravity. That's all. It's all real.
Dear me, that's incredible. That's absolutely incredible.
Still interested in hostile takeovers?
It's the opportunities for travel that I like best about banking.
So yeah, the world is not enough. Obviously, you were called back. So was that like a agreement almost, or was it just you happened to be able to do it at the time?
Yeah, we're all freelance guys and we all work on different things. So a couple of years later, Vic was no longer the coordinator. He was now directing it, just directing it. He directed Tomorrow Never Dies as well. But no, Simon Kramer's back in the saddle, and Simon was coordinating, and he called up to play a part. There was a couple of us in the missile silo.
Yeah.
Feelings, Mr. Bond. But we're even. Soon, you'll feel nothing at all.
There was other bits. We did the boat chase, although we were passengers in restaurants and driving cars.
Really?
Yeah, so we were in for that. But then Simon called a couple of us, myself and my good friend Paul Heisman. We were the so-called Russian bomb scientists. We were working on a nuclear missile thing, and Piers gets arrested, and then he obviously shoots us and has a gunfight with us and then escapes. And then we did the whole thing right up to him then jumping on a chain block and whizzing down a corridor as the whole thing explodes. We were there for
So Bond.
For the safety side of stuff. So I can't remember all these years later how long we were on it. It was about six or 7 weeks we were there trying to get that whole sequence together. And then, got whisked off onto another job and that was it.
No time to pause, yeah.
it was happy times, but it was quite a long time ago now.
I mean, that scene, was that at Pinewood, the mission missile silo one?
Yeah. I don't know where they shot the outside stuff, but yeah, all the inside the silo when they go in and that whole thing, again, was on the 00. It's exactly the same sound stage that they shot the underwater sequence.
Oh, right.
Built the whole silo on there. So
how does it work with guns, like shooting guns? Because obviously, I think you've got a machine gun, I think, in that scene or something.
Yeah, we did. The armourers on that film, you sort of seen the same armourers and same people, the crew sort of bump into. The armour on that, I've worked with many times, a guy called Charlie Bodicombe. So Charlie was the armourer on that, I remember. Actually, with that, the director, Michael Apted, who sadly passed away last year, I remember that they were doing a shot of me trying to reload. And the guns on that were quite fiddly. They were some sort of Russian gun with a plastic magazine. It was all quite fiddly. And I'm not the most dexterous with all that, and certainly not when there's a camera filming you and the director saying, do it quicker, do this, do that. So I fumbled a couple of passes of me doing that. And then he said, oh, we'll go one more. So I had an idea. I said, Charlie, have you got another gun? He went, yeah. I said, give us that. So he said, he gave me the gun. So then I made a little hole in the set, which couldn't be seen. I smashed a little. I stuck the gun in there. And then what I did was I fired the machine gun and emptied the magazine and then quickly sort of put that one down and then mooted under me coat what was supposed to be and then pulled it up in about 2 seconds. I went, oh, that worked. And then ended the next magazine round. And no one saw me with the two guns switching it. So I don't think it picked up in the edit. So
so good.
I mean, the Pierce Bros, those two films, some of the stunt work is exceptional on both those films. And just wondering, obviously the next film after that was Die Another Day, where a lot of CGI use was in there. And as a stuntman, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one. It's a great tool and it can make things very, it can help you out, make things a lot safer, but it's not the be all and end all. So by that, I mean, if you go back in time when we used to first use wires and when I started in the industry, we would be on very small cables, maybe 1.2 millimeter cable that we used to then paint out to match the sky or the background because they didn't have visual effects to remove them. So they had to be very thin. Now you can be on cables that are like 4 millimeters thick and even stronger than they would have been then and have as many as you like and they can paint them out. So that's made things a lot safer because the old cables used to break. And before that, it was piano wire, which is a single strand. So it was even more dangerous. So now that all helps. I mean, it does deliver new feels for things. I mean, you can create whole environments much more cost effectively. But I do think if you look at sequences, and I'll give an example, Lawrence of Arabia or Spartacus or any of those films, even through to the stuff that I did on First Night, where when we did the cavalry charge at night, there were 200 horses, 250 horses, galloping across a field in Oxfordshire or Hertfordshire at night. In armor, you know, there was one rider in front of me. We changed positioning. If anyone's not seen it in that particular film, the knights all gallop out in rows, and then the front row changes position. And I was second from the front, and there's 200 plus horses in armor at night galloping behind you. And it is a sight to behold. Mm-hmm. Where if you now look at sequences, and let's use the latest Justice League or Wonder Woman, etc. All the horses, not all, but a lot of the horse action there is visual effects. The horses are not real; they're visual effects trick. So I think to a feel, it's things like that start to show as an older viewer, middle aged viewer. Let's put it that way. But then you know it depends what you want to do, how you want to approach filmmaking, or what they want to do. It's a tool; it's not the be all and end all.
Yeah. Did you want to be involved in Die Another Day?
funny enough, I did get phone for it. There was at the time, I can't remember, there was a problem or it was, I was on something else. The whole hovercraft sequence, I think, was, and I wasn't available. So I never, I didn't work on that one and haven't worked on a Bond film since, actually.
No.
it's not like, I just haven't been available. I've been doing my own thing and my career took a slight turn, and I've sort of been my own course, really, rather than it was coming to the end of my performing days.
You wouldn't have liked to have bowed out with a lovely windsurfing scene on Die Another Day?
Well, probably not, no. Although, there's some still some classic bits in that. I mean, as much as it wasn't very good, and I think globally no one thinks it was very good, the car chase on the ice between George Cott and Ray DeHaan with the Aston in the jail. But Vic shot is brilliant. It looked amazing. Both Ray and George did a great job with the cars.
Definitely.
I think it's a standalone. I've seen some funny photos. Ray's a very good friend of mine. I see at his house, and he's got pictures of him where he lost control of the Aston and crashed into an iceberg. So there can't be too many people that have actually can claim to fame that they've. Doubling James Bond and crashed the Aston into an iceberg.
It's invisible. Shouldn't have crashed.
Yeah.
I've seen the back wheels. It was like that, and there wasn't a straight panel on it.
So yeah, it wasn't.
Ray banged his head and got concussion. So yeah, he definitely hit an iceberg. I'm sure he won't mind me saying this if he sees this interview.
No. Can you just tell us a bit more about that huge opening pre-title sequence to The World Is Not Enough? So you said you were on the side as a sort of pedestrian and stuff like that.
Yeah, the guys put together a boat chase. And from what I understand, that they were doing testing on a lake with this little jet boat that had come out of New Zealand. They'd use these things to fly around New Zealand in races. So the Bond people and Simon Crane, who's the call danger, picked up to actually use this in the opening sequence and build a little 007 boat. Within the testing, they were trying to sort of do a jump. And in that, they nearly crashed it. They nearly crashed the boat and rolled the boat. But then that became part of an idea. And from what I understand is they then went back to Man with a Golden Gun with the famous Astro Spiral with the car and thought, well, let's try and copy that gag, but do it with the boat.
Yeah.
So with the aid of the great Dave Bickers, the stunt engineer, and Bickers Action, they built an air cannon into it. So as they jumped the boat, they pressed a button. That then pushed some air and it spun the boat over. And if you get the right timing and the right pressure, they did what they did. They hit a little ramp, spun the boat over, landed back and carried on. My involvement was very minor in that. As I say, we were in a restaurant. The boat goes up through a restaurant and out the other side, and we were all the restaurantees. And we were in for a couple of days driving cars and bits and pieces. But again, trying to set up a huge boat chase in London, probably only the Bond film could ever one. Or two afford it.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Dear me. Yeah, so in terms of like the direction of the Bond franchise, they did for a bit, certainly after that, in the early Daniel Craig days, they went a bit more like Bourne. So I don't know, it's like one franchise is inspired by another and then that franchise gets inspired by something else, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely went Bourne-esque. The shooting style of that matched Paul Greengrass and the Bourne films. Personally, it's not my cup of tea. I find that you get an overdose of, or an overload of shots, and it's like, ooh, me personally, I find you lose the geography of where they are. You lose the skill of the performers in the choreography and the fighting skill of the doubles in what they're doing. So me personally, it's not what I like. But yeah, Bond definitely went Bourne to jazz it up and change the feel of it. I'm still, as I mentioned earlier, much more classic. I'm much more Sean Connery and George Lazenby and even early Roger. They're my faves. And I think the Bond thing, for me as a viewer, maybe lost its little twist and its feel in the past few years. The class that Bond is fantasy. You know, he walks into the casino in Monte Carlo and the waiter knows who he is and all the ladies swoon at him and it all got a bit too gritty, which is fine for Bond, but me personally as a viewer, I don't see it as Bond. It shouldn't, it shouldn't be.
We'd love it to go back a bit in terms of the stunts. It'd be great to see some proper practical stunts because like Mission Impossible, like you say, they're doing it, aren't they? And it can still be done. There is still a place for it.
Well, there you go. I think Tom's gone the other way. Tom's gone the classic Bond and he's gone completely the other way and he's trying to come up with one-off stunts. A very good friend of mine, well, they're both friends of mine, Wayne Michaels and his wife, Tracy. Wayne obviously did the Golden Eye Dam Dive. Mm. And really, to me, a bit like Rick Sylvester did before that. And I don't think they realised when they did it, it would give them the momentum the movie that it did. But the minute Wayne dived off that dam, people were going to see the movie just to see the first 5 minutes. Let alone the rest of the movie, because they just wanted to see this action sequence with this. And he's not a lunatic, he's a very sensible man. this you know, guy diving off a dam, that's what Bond should be. Mm. And
Yeah,
they're not doing that anymore. I think it's drifted away. Yeah, it's a bit of a motorbike and they're skidding around a bit of an Aston Martin or something, but nothing like what they used to do. It's that bit I think they should do.
Is that one of the reasons why George Lazenby is so high on your list into the Bonds, because of the physicality and the stunt work that he did and stuff?
I got to work with him actually briefly. He played Jor-El, Superman's dad, on a TV show that I shot in Florida. I did speak to him. 1990 or 91 or something. So I met him then briefly. And again, like Sean, he was a big fella. and very capable. So, but I think just that the way those films were put together, it just gave it a bit more finesse and style. And he, you know, he was dressed in his finery, and he did have an Aston Martin, and he, you know, it was some more class to it. I'm not saying the latter Piers ones and Daniel didn't bring class to it, but I don't think they had the same feel. I think they went more Bourne-esque. And as a fan and a viewer, I still hark back to the originals.
So have you worked with every Bond actor then? Have you worked with Roger?
I didn't work with Roger, bless him. No. I didn't, no, which is a shame. Or David Niven. He was a bit before my time.
Oh, David Niven. Yeah.
Or Peter Cullen.
Yeah.
So, no. Yeah.
Oh, super.
That's amazing. That is so
good. Oh, dear me. Math, I think you'd like to mention Batman as well.
I understand that you worked on both 1989 Batman with Tim Burton and the 2012 The Dark Knight Rises with Christopher Nolan. Is that right? Oh, my.
Yeah.
What scenes did you do in those two films, if you don't mind?
Not at all. Going back to the late 80s, again, there was a Batman was being made at Pinewood Studios. Towards the latter half of the film, there's a bit where Jack Nicholson comes out and he's throwing money and they're having a big street festival.
Yeah.
And we were all driving the police cars and running around in the street grabbing money and fighting in the streets and stuff. So that was our involvement of that.
Yeah.
And then Batman comes in his little bat plane and then he was running around. That was a number of night shoots at Pinewood Studios for that. And then by chance, I was in prep in Los Angeles for other work. I was staying at a friend of mine's house who was working on the Chris Nolan Batman. George, he used to drive the Batmobile. So he said, what are you doing? Do you want to come and you want some work? I went, yeah. You know, money. I'm not here with a family. So if there's any work about, I'll take it. So I ended up working on Batman for that. And we were involved in the piece where Bane is then robbing the finance district.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a stock exchange. There's no money you can steal.
Really? And why are you people here?
I was actually in New York when that scene was being filmed, and I sort of watched a bit of it. But yeah, I knew I recognised you from somewhere. No. So what? So were you on the motorbikes, or were you in?
No. It was literally just as he comes in and they shoot up the place and diving out the cables and getting out of the way. We're involved with that.
Wow.
I said to someone not long ago, actually, I think in my career I've lost fights or been beaten up by James Bond, Superman, Batman, and Indiana Jones.
Wow.
No disgrace, Lee.
No shame.
Some of the other films, just to mention, you've been in. You're in one of the Transformers films. Is that right?
I did the last one. There's another one. Is it one more scenes? I did the last Michael Bay one that was shot in London.
Yeah.
We did a sequence where it was a whole medieval thing to it, but we were doing a robot unit with Mark Wahlberg. And we had Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
And he was picked up by a robot and he's controlled, puppeteered by a robot. So I did all that for a couple of weeks.
So good. Underrated film.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah, there's also another one I've seen, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I mean, absolute classic.
That period, there was two Robin Hoods being made at the same time.
Yeah.
Films tend to be like buses. Once they make one, they make them like they come along in twos. So, there was the Kevin Reynolds one, and at the same time, there was a John Irvine one. So, a lot of the guys, like myself, were skipping between the two. So, luckily, you could, do a sword fight in Sherwood Forest just in Black Park and then shoot up to North Wales to Betsy Cohen and shoot another Robin Hood sword fight up there. If you were really clever, you could do the same fight on the same film and wouldn't have to learn a different fight. Because if there was two of you going and they said, well, guys, put some fights together, you'd get match with your partner and do a sword fight, and then next week you're on a different film, but if the same guy was there, and usually with Paul Heasman it was me and Paul, we'd use the same fight on two films and get away with it.
This is brilliant. No one notices until now. Go back and watch each one.
Not
there.
At all.
Dear
not
me.
At all.
Did he get a chance to meet Kevin Costner on that? Not Sean Connery, presumably.
No, I didn't. No, I spent most of the time laying in the mud again.
Yeah. Well, Lee, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
You're just the
experience you've had, and I think the way you've moved up in your career is incredible. It's like a good old fashioned story, isn't it? Of hard work, perseverance, and just enjoying your job, I guess.
That's very kind of you to put it like that. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoy my job, and we have a lot of fun. So hopefully I've got a few more years to pursue yet. And I'm still looking for the next adventure.
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, mate.
Honestly, thank you so much. This has been so great.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Listen, it's nice just to help the viewing fans out because, I mean, again, over the years, you wouldn't believe the amount of people that come up to you and ask the most obscure questions. I was coming through Heathrow many years ago, you know, like we all do in the X-ray machine and getting patted down. And I don't wear it so much anymore, but I used to have a belt buckle that I was given in America from the Stuntmen's Association. And the guy patting me down, the security guard, looked at it, saw the belt, looked up, and he went to me, "You're Lee Sheward." And I was like, "Is he me ticket or something?" And I went, "Yeah." And then he just riddled off like 10 jobs I'd done. And he was part of the Bond Appreciation Society, and he just knew everything about everybody.
We'll try and find who this guy is, Lee. I'm sure we'll probably know him online.
But you do get people. And listen, we're there for the fans. If the fans didn't go and watch TV and watch the movies, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
So, you know, as much as I do what I do for nothing, it is a job. I mean, I do get paid. And we need people to keep going on to Netflix and Hulu and buying DVDs and stuff to keep the industry going. So anything I could give back to you, the viewing audience, you know, I'm more than happy to help. Wow. Same as, you know, I was 54 last week. You know, my performing days are over. I don't bounce like I used to. So the younger stuntmen that are starting out and girls, as I say, Phoebe started working with me, any of my experiences that I can drum into them to help them making their careers safe, then I'm more than happy to help out because, you know, if you don't give back, you can't just keep take. You'll give something back to the industry.
It's a great reflection on the industry itself, Lee, just to speak with you.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's not a closed book. People are really happy to talk about the job and the role. So, brilliant.
You're very welcome, boys. You're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Lee.
Well, appreciate it. Enjoy the Greek sunshine and the lovely beaches and all that. Yeah.
I'm stuck here till September.
Stuck, yeah.
Someone's
got to
do it.
Send our love to Daniel as well.
Yeah.
I'll let you know. Really,
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.